up. It's Brett Whitefield with On The Clock on FantasyPoints.com. Today we are jumping into Jaden Daniels and Marvin Harrison Jr. You can find the videos over at YouTube as well. I am the film expert today. I'm going to be joined by my co-host Scott Barrett, who is the CEO of FantasyPoints.com. He is the analytics expert, and the goal of the show is to go player by player in this year's rookie class. We're hitting the ADP for rookie draft, and we are going to debate film versus analytics. Without further ado, let's dive right in. Scott, my man. What's good, brother?
Yeah, happy to be back. I missed you.
Yes. I love the series. We're going player by player. We've already done a couple of the hot names, Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr. Today, we're going to be talking about Jaden Daniels. And I know you're going to tell everyone that analytics don't matter a ton for Jaden Daniels, but you being the tremendous analytics guy that you are, I'm sure you have some really cool, interesting stats prepared for us that are analytically driven, that maybe some things that Jaden Daniels does that drives you insane.
Yeah, so that's exactly right. As I discussed with Caleb Williams, I'm not really going to be much help with quarterbacks. I've tried to build a quarterback prospect model before, like I have with other positions, but I've always abandoned it just because it's never anywhere near as predicted. But if I were to build a quarterback model, the key stats would be sack avoidance, accuracy, rushing production, draft capital. Daniels certainly checks the draft capital box, projected to go top three in the draft. In terms of rushing production, he looks elite. He averaged 104.2 rushing yards per game in 2023. Only one other Power Five quarterback drafted day one or day two ever had more in a single season. That was Lamar Jackson. Jaden Daniels averaged 40 fantasy points per game in 2023. I know fantasy points doesn't seem like a predictive stat, but it is for the game of fantasy. That ranks second best since 2016 on a top seven list with Lamar, Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts, Joe Burrow, Kyler Murray. That's a stacked list. All of his passing stats look insane. Maybe you've seen the graphic on Twitter comparing his numbers when he won the Heisman to Joe Burrow when he won it. I assume Daniels just had like way more dropbacks, or there was something fluky or fraudulent there. Nope, he just had an insane season. This is all the good news. For red flags, we can talk about how old he is. We can talk about how he didn't cross 3,000 passing yards or 17 passing touchdowns until his fifth season. How he also benefited from high-end receiver talent, Brandon Ayuk, Ricky Purcell, Rashad White, Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas Jr. All of these are minor points to me. Here's the big one. Pressure to sack ratio is really one of the best, most predictive, stickiest stats when projecting college quarterbacks to the next level. And it's also one of the most underrated stats at the NFL level. He is a 24.5% career pressure to sack ratio, one of the worst of any projected day one or day two quarterbacks since 2014, behind only Hendon Hooker, Sam Howell, Will Levis, Desmond Ridder, barely ahead of Justin Fields and Zach Wilson. On top of that, he has the highest career scramble rate on non-pressure dropbacks or when in the pocket for longer than 2.5 seconds. So the question there is, why is he so quick to bail on clean pockets with a great receiving core? That worries me, and as he heads into the next level. And then, of course, like the counter argument, especially for fantasy, is like, well, he was an elite scrambler. I think he had the most scramble yards per carry and the most scramble yards per game of any quarterback in any season since 2014. And so ultimately, to put a pin in this, he reminds me of Justin Fields when he was coming out. Like, I'm going to love him for redraft, but I have these concerns long-term. And so like, I don't know how long he starts in the NFL. I'm going to leave that up to draft capital or for you to tell me, but I do know that in any game he does start, he's probably an easy mid-range QB1 for fantasy just because of his rushing upside, which is such a cheat code. And that gives him a major edge over quarterbacks like Drake May and JJ McCarthy, where the downside is like Justin Fields was just traded for peanuts, but he was behind only Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts in fantasy points per game the past year and a half when he was starting. And, you know, maybe Jaden Daniels is even better than that because his numbers are so insane. So that's where I'm leaving off. And you can tell me how far off I am with that comp.
Well, so before I dive into my bit, Scott, I want to dialogue a little bit here. I do think we're going to see Jaden Daniels very similarly, actually. Like, your red flags and my red flags pretty much align right on. The pressure to sack stuff is ridiculous. The constant bailing from a clean pocket is crazy, right? So when I dive into Jaden Daniels' tape, the thing I keep coming back to with the bailing from a clean pocket is, like, how much of that is just because he knows he's a bad dude running the football? You know, like if you have that ace in the hole, I mean, and this is better than Justin Fields, by the way. This is his running ability. Justin Fields was not a very good runner in college, actually. Jaden Daniels had more rushing yards this year than Justin Fields did his entire college career. So, I mean, this is, like, I think Fields' best year running the ball was like 400 or something. Jaden Daniels had like near 1,200 yards this year. So I think he's a Lamar Jackson level runner of the football. And I think this is great. You can design an offense through him. So to answer some of your questions, Scott, like, yeah, I don't know what to do with the pressure to sack stuff. I don't know what to do with that. That's a really damning thing for me. It's tough. But when I look at the pros of what Jaden Daniels does, I start to feel a lot better about him. And he's another one of these really toolsy prospects that has a lot of warts. But let's talk about those pros. Elite accuracy, repeatable mechanics. His release is consistent. He can throw from multiple platforms, multiple arm angles. And especially when we're talking downfield passing, I can't remember a quarterback coming out in the last 9 years that hit as many go balls in stride as Jaden Daniels did, 50 plus yards downfield. I mean, it was every game he's hitting multiple throws of this variety, 50 plus yards downfield, hitting Malik Nabers right in stride, hitting Brian Thomas Jr. in stride with, you know, they're not having to make adjustments on the football. They don't even need body control or anything like that. They're just tracking the ball, catching it in stride and scoring. That's elite stuff there. I mean, that's really, really good arm talent. He doesn't have the strongest arm in the world, but his ability to stand in the pocket and throw with rhythm and timing, a little bit of anticipation. You don't see a ton of it, but you see some. It's all incredible. We talked about the running ability. I think this is a guy you can design your entire offense around. If he gets with a modern offensive coordinator that can take that game, build in the QB run stuff, that's all gravy, right? He should be a 1,000-yard runner in the NFL. Everything you've seen with Lamar Jackson early in his career, like, Jaden Daniels is far along in the QBing process than Lamar Jackson was when he was coming out. Part of that is his age, right? And a lot of people use that age against him. Obviously, it's a concern. He's 24 years old or whatever. He's going to be a 25-year-old rookie at some point, I believe. I kind of, like, it is concerning, but I take an alternative angle there, and I say this is a proof of concept for him as far as development goes. Like, when he finished his age 21 season, no one on planet Earth thought this guy was a first round pick, let alone a top 10 pick, right? But he kept getting better. Every year he got just a little bit better. Even in 2023, Scott, he got a lot better. From game one to the end of the season, Jaden Daniels got a lot better in the inside of the 2023 season. So that proof of concept from a development standpoint, I'm hugely attracted to that. I think that's great. I think some of the things he struggles with, you know, bailing from a clean pocket, he doesn't really run to throw the football. So when he scrambles and escapes the pocket, he's not looking to throw the ball downfield. He's not keeping his eyes downfield. He's just running the football. I think he'll continue to develop at the next level, hopefully. Get with the right coach who can speed up his process a little bit. That's all great. So I actually like the age thing. I think that's a really nice proof of concept there. Some of the other concerns I have, Scott, he doesn't attack the middle of the field very well, or at least didn't until the end of 2023. And you invoked the name Justin Fields, so we got to bring it up, right? This is Justin Fields all over again in some ways, where Fields just doesn't really get through his progressions well, and he can't throw accurate footballs in time over the middle of the field. I worry about that with Daniels. Now, he did start to do it at the end of last year. The last five games, I think starting in the Mississippi State game, you saw him hit a couple in-breakers over the middle in crucial moments. He hit a seam ball or two in crucial moments. Overall, though, I think that is something he's really going to have to work on developing, you know, continuing with that trend I just talked about. Then the last thing for me, Scott, is his size. Like, I know we've all been like BMI Nazis the last 5 years, starting with Devontae Smith, but for quarterbacks, I think it's hugely important, right? This guy is 6'4" and like 190 pounds. I mean, that's kind of scary, right? Especially for a guy who's going to run the ball as much as he is. Can he take hits? And we see on tape, he takes a lot of unnecessary hits. He doesn't do a great job getting down, doesn't do a good job of getting out of bounds, setting up, you know, pursuit angles so he doesn't take the full force of a linebacker bearing down on him. Things that, like, you know, Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson are excellent at, Jaden Daniels hasn't quite figured that part out yet about being a run first quarterback. So,
yeah. So I don't think I disagree with any of that. I think that makes a lot of sense. The question I'd pose back to you though is, are you prepared to take him with the 103 pick? Do you feel good about that?
So in the context of fantasy football, you said it with, like, Justin Fields, like, even as bad as he's been, and a guy who just got traded in the NFL for a 6th round pick, he's still been an absolute fantasy stud. So I think you have to, like, I think it's a no brainer for me to sit there and take, like we talked earlier with the Caleb Williams stuff. Like, if you're at 101 and you can trade back to 103, pick up an extra few picks and get Jaden Daniels, that's a slam dunk to me. You're going to get a guy, like I said, he should be a 1,000-yard runner at some point in his career. The only concern, really, from a fantasy standpoint, is maybe he only starts 3 seasons with his first team. If he doesn't reach the ceiling, if he doesn't continue to get better, if, say, the bottom falls out, he might only start 3 seasons in the NFL for his original team that drafts him. That's really the only concern from a fantasy standpoint. But I think you take him 103, you're going to get top 10 QB production out the gate for at least the next 3 years.
Yeah, I think even when you look at Caleb Williams, who's going to be throwing to DJ Moore and Keenan Allen,
allegedly,
and that's a great supporting cast. And let's say Jaden Daniels goes to the Patriots, which is not a great supporting cast. I do not care. I think on a per start basis, Jaden Daniels should have by far the higher per game expectation. And, you know, over however many games he does start. And sure, that's a question mark, but I mean, players drafted top three seem to be getting second and third and fourth chances. So to me, he's a value. To me, I think this is a great pick. I think in redraft, he's a player I'm going to be all over.
Yes.
And at the 103, that seems like good value. And in startup drafts, he's the QB12. That seems like really good value. I'm super in on this. I don't see much downside because, again, you know, he's going to be a star mid-range QB1. Even if he's not good at real football, which is exactly the case with Justin Fields.
You'll see I have Jaden Daniels as, you know, in that QB2, QB3 range in the class. I think the pros are enough for me to look past some of those warts, especially if I'm an NFL team and sitting in that GM chair. I'm just looking at all the good things he does, and it does outweigh the bad by a pretty significant margin, similar to how it does with Caleb Williams, and we'll get into Drake May later. All these guys have a lot of warts, and I think the pros ultimately outweigh the cons. So I'm sticking with him as my QB2 or 3 right now. He's in that mix. I got to finalize the board, Scott, but he's not going to be lower than QB3. I'll promise you that. So,
yeah. And remember, yours is an NFL board. Mine is a fantasy board. So don't be shocked if Jaden Daniels winds up as my QB1. Probably won't. We'll probably cave to draft capital, but don't be surprised.
And for what it's worth, too, to your point, Scott, Caleb Williams is going to have a much more sustainable environment if he does indeed go to number one overall to the Chicago Bears. You know, we talked about it on his show, but Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, DeAndre Swift, Cole Kmet, pretty well put together offensive line, much more sustainable environment for him to develop and grow and be good. So I don't see a problem with that.
He's my rookie redraft QB1 for sure, though.
Yeah, I like that. The Konami code, as you've taught me, is strong with Jaden Daniels.
That's right. What about a comp, Brett? You have stylistic comp?
Yeah, I do. When I throw this out there, people are going to be like, I don't like that. But you got to think about rookie season, second season, RG3 coming out of Baylor. This was a dude who was awesome. I mean, especially for fantasy, right? Like, he was legitimately awesome. Exceptional run of the football. His downfield accuracy was awesome. He did the same exact things well that Jaden Daniels does well. He just, unfortunately, injuries got a hold of him and he never continued to develop. And I don't know why that is. Hopefully Jaden Daniels isn't subject to the same fate, but RG3 to me is the comp I can't unsee when I watch him.
Yeah, I don't hate that. That was one of the best rookie quarterback seasons in fantasy history. So if he has a season like that, I think people drafting him here would be ecstatic with that.
Yeah, and as you know, from watching Lamar over the years and Fields recently, the NFL is also more ready for that type of QB than they were when RG3 was drafted. So Scott, why don't you start us off? Give us your analytical take on the Ohio State stud muffin, Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah. So the way my process works is I start with my model. I use that as a sort of a baseline, and then I'll make manual adjustments from there. I penalize slot players. I penalize players who are overly reliant on screens and other types of what I deem to be fraudulent production. And so on the first pass of my model, Harrison looked great. He looked really, really good, but not elite. Malik Nabers actually did look elite. Yeah, I had him as a top five wide receiver prospect this past decade. But then Nabers dropped back down below Harrison after some manual adjustments. And then Harrison, meanwhile, had like literally zero warts, which is like so hard to find from a prospect. Jamar Chase is like the only ever perfect, totally wart-free, perfect wide receiver prospect. And Harrison actually had a bunch of green flags. But that being said, it's still not really an elite profile. It felt like it would have been easier for me than it was to make that argument. Again, he's really, really good, really, really safe. The wide receiver one in this class, but just not a CeeDee Lamb or Jamar Chase range of a prospect. Some key stats. He had the best in class yards per route run against man coverage. He had the second and third best seasons by outside yards per route run. He had one of the most diverse route trees in the class. One of my favorite metrics everyone knows is age adjusted yards per route run. So since 2016, there's only been seven wide receivers with multiple seasons in the top 75th percentile by age adjusted yards per route run. And I might have removed a few guys who are like 50+% slot share. But anyway, on that list, you have Marvin Harrison Jr., you have CeeDee Lamb, Devonta Smith, Chris Olave, T. Higgins, Hollywood Brown. So that's a really good sort of, you know, you can measure a stat by the top X on that list. And so he looks pretty good there. But what's interesting to me is, again, I keep coming back to the fact that he wasn't quite elite, at least not in the first pass of my model. And now we're seeing, literally today as we're recording, Lance Zierlein, Daniel Jeremiah, Dane Brugler, all leaking out that multiple NFL teams are sort of all over the board on who actually is the wide receiver one in this class. We saw Chris Sims put Harrison behind both Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas. He cited a lack of explosion, a lack of separation. And if I want to be nitpicky, I did see those same concerns, at least a little bit. Trey, our producer, can pull up a stat here. 14th percentile contested target rate. That's what I use as a proxy for separation. And then the after the catch metrics certainly left a lot to be desired there. So Brett, I need some help here. You know, I just conceded the point earlier. You know, I think analytics can help give you a baseline, but for the sort of context and nuance that we're looking for, it might take an elite film mind such as yourself. So Marvin Harrison Jr., how good is he? Is he the wide receiver one in the class? Is he really a quote unquote generational wide receiver prospect?
So here's what I'll do. I'll blast through my pros and cons of Marvin Harrison Jr. real quick, like a quick scouting report, and then I'll address some of your concerns head on. So pros, when you're talking Marvin Harrison Jr., you're talking about prototype size and athletic profile. Right. So like the last 3-4 years, we haven't had those prototype X receivers in the league. Pretty easy for people, you know, sitting in an analytical chair to say, oh, well, the league's going away from those guys. It's not really true. I think some of the best receivers in the league are big X type guys. Harrison is that guy. So, you know, we've been void of those players in this draft. He is the prototype X receiver. I think he's an incredible athlete. I don't see any concerns. I've seen, you know, Chris Sims say he lacks explosiveness. I think that is complete hootenanny. That is ridiculous. I mean, I think the athleticism jumps off the page anytime you watch him. He's an excellent route runner, especially for his size. When you're talking big X receivers, it's pretty rare to have a guy that can run routes. You mentioned the route tree diversity. One of the things I really like to scout with guys that are profiling as a wide receiver one is how well they run routes over the middle of the field. Can they stack defenders? Can they get them off balance? Can they sell the route that they're running? And Harrison is excellent on dig routes. It's one of the harder routes to run for a big guy. His ability to sink his hips, to keep those ankles unlocked and kind of break on acute angles, it's unparalleled for a guy his size. So, yes, he is the complete package at wide receiver. He can attack all three levels of the field. I really, really enjoy watching him with the ball in his hands. And I know you've talked about some run after catch concerns here, Scott, but that is not a concern of mine. I think you have to look at the role he was asked to play at Ohio State. He was a boundary receiver. Most of his catches came along the boundary on go routes and stop routes, comebacks, where there's no rack opportunity built in. We kind of had the same conversation with a guy like Cedric Tillman last year. Very similar role. Now, obviously, Ohio State doesn't play that extreme spread that Tennessee plays. But, you know, when he's catching the ball with his foot basically on the boundary and he's just getting shoved out of bounds, there's no chance for rack. But when they did design it up for him, when they did scheme it up for him to get the ball in his hands, he was excellent after the catch. You see all the traits you're looking for in a guy who's going to, you know, dominate after the catch at the next level. His ability to locate defenders immediately, his ability to transition with the ball in his hands is excellent. He's got make you miss moves, you know, awesome vision and speed in the open field. Excellent stuff. And then lastly, Scott, my favorite thing about Marvin Harrison Jr. is the release package. There was no wide receiver probably in my 9 years of scouting players, Scott, that had as many reps beating press coverage as Marvin Harrison Jr. did at the college level. When you talk about a lack of separation, that's all you're seeing is just a guy who's routinely getting pressed on the boundary, having to defeat that press. He's got a great release package. He's got a foot fire release package. He's got a diamond burst release game. Great hand usage. His hands and his feet are always synced up. Really limits the amount of contact he allows defenders to get into his chest plate. And he beats press pretty much at will. So I think he checks all those boxes. The separation stuff is absolutely there. I think he's a phenomenal separator downfield, despite what Chris Sims says, or whatever the contested catch, contested rate stat that you provided us says. Anything else?
Yeah, I just disagree. I think he's a bust. I think if his last name was Jackson, we wouldn't even know who this guy is. I think, no, I'm just messing with you. Yeah, so you're saying, you know, he's great after the catch, but yeah, the numbers really just don't bear that out. You're saying he's, you know, contrary to his contested target rate. No, he gets open at will. That's just not the case analytically. And so maybe there's more context there. The context, one context you could use is maybe, you know, whoever's charting these metrics are just not doing a good job. That was the case with Drake London famously,
hold on a sec. Let's talk about Drake. So it wasn't just bad charting. It's just, you have to apply context to charting. So Drake London had 53 contested catch opportunities his final year at USC, right? You and I watched all 53 of them, and how many of them were the result of a bad throw or a schemed up play? If you're throwing an end zone fade to a wide receiver, it's going to be contested by default. Marvin Harrison Jr. probably had more end zone fades than any player the last decade. I mean, these are all things you can point to. Kyle McCord is a really bad quarterback. I mean, really bad quarterback. He went from CJ Stroud to Kyle McCord, the contested catch rate or contested catch opportunity, you know, by percentage skyrocket. So I don't think that's a coincidence when you see the way Ohio State was using him, and then also the quarterback play. Like, also he got a ton of extra attention and coverage as well. Like a lot of routes where he's breaking over the middle of the field, he's got a safety bearing down on him with a corner in his hip pocket. I mean, that's like, you're just naturally going to run into a lot of contested situations.
Yeah. I don't have the access to how many end zone fades he ran, but I think that's good context that could explain it. I can't put it all on Kyle McCord because it does predate Kyle McCord. It was the same thing in 2022. This isn't red flag levels like it is for Keon Coleman or Johnny Wilson, where the hit rate is like really abysmal. It's just like sort of on the cusp of that red flag range. And it's just something I need more information on. And so, you know, it certainly could just be the end zone fade like you're talking about. And when you bring up that, you know, he got extra attention, that kind of helps things out as well, because looking at his numbers, you know, he really didn't separate himself from Amika Egbuka all that much in 2022. And then even in 2023 to extent before Egbuka dealt with injuries. And I know quarterback play wasn't great last year, but that was also like Marvin Harrison Jr.'s boy. Like, they played together in high school. They're close personal friends. And so those were just a few things that stood out to me. And again, I know you like him after the catch, just the numbers weren't good there. And so like I started off at the top, like these are just questions I have that's going to take an elite film mind such as yourself to answer and help dissuade me of any concerns.
Right on. So where are we landing here? Where is he at in your rankings right now, Scott?
Yeah. So, you know, wide receiver one, it makes all the sense in the world. 102 pick, that makes all the sense in the world. And I'm sure you agree with that. The question I'll pose to you is it goes back to that, well, is he generational? And so, you know, if you wanted to trade out of this pick, you can get a lot because, you know, within the NFL mock draft cognoscenti space, he's not the runaway wide receiver one generational talent. You do have people leaking that there are NFL teams who disagree with that. But in the dynasty fantasy space, it's no, this is a generational talent. And so when I look at this, I'm thinking of people keep saying, like, who is the Puka Nacua of this year's class? But it's like, would I rather have Puka Nacua than Marvin Harrison Jr.? I think that's a serious debate. I mean, Puka Nacua had a better career yards per route run than any receiver in this class. He just had the most receiving yards of any rookie wide receiver in NFL history. And so that's kind of my frame of reference point is you can trade Marvin Harrison Jr., the 102 for Puka plus. Would you do that or do you see Harrison as this sort of generational talent?
No, that's a great question. First of all, the term generational talent needs to be retired. I'm putting it in the retirement bin right next to knows ball, he knows ball, she knows ball. That's such a dumb phrase. And then also prospect fatigue. These are all dumb phrases we got to stop using, okay? Generational talent's a dumb word. I don't think he's a generational talent, no. I mean, there's phenomenal wide receivers that come in the league every single year. He scores as one of the better players I've ever watched at the position, but I wouldn't call him generational. And to your point, if you can get a Puka Nacua plus type of haul for him, I feel like you have to take that. We've got proof of concept at the NFL level with Puka already. We don't have that with Marvin Harrison Jr. There's no such thing as a perfect prospect, right? And there is a non-zero chance that, you know, maybe eventually he doesn't live up to the hype. So it is what it is. I definitely agree with you. I would take the haul. I would take the Puka Nacua haul.
All right. So I think we've settled this, but let's end on what everyone wants, which is Brett. Give me a baseline comp, a downside comp, and an upside comp. I'll give you a comp myself. You know who Marvin Harrison Jr. reminds me a lot of? And I know this is lofty because he's a Hall of Famer, but you know, when I see him, I just can't help but think of Marvin Harrison Sr. for some reason.
Okay. I mean, that's
no, yeah, okay. I mean, I have no idea. So you tell me, you watched every single snap he's ever played. So what's your comp?
Yeah, my comp for him is, my ceiling comp is AJ Green, or I should say style comp. I don't really do ceiling floor comps, Scott, you know that. I do style comps. When I watch Marvin Harrison Jr., I see AJ Green. I see the same vertical skill set. I see the ball tracking skills. I see the contested catch ability. I see the deep separation, the ability to run away from just about anybody. Body control along the boundary all reminds me of AJ Green. So I didn't prepare if this doesn't work out comp. I'm trying to think on the fly here. I'm just going to stick with AJ Green. I think that's the style comp. That's who he reminds me of. I can't unsee it. And so AJ Green is my comp.
I think that's a great one. I think dynasty players would be super happy with, what was it, 7 straight Pro Bowls, 7 straight 1,000-yard seasons. So, I think that fits perfectly from what I've seen on tape.
Right on. All right, he is my wide receiver one in the class, too, just to plant that flag firmly. I don't think, for me, there's no debate. I love Rome. I love Malik. They're not quite there for me. So,
wide receiver one and a tier?
A tier wide gap? Receiver one. I think Rome is a lot closer to Marv than Malik, but that's for a different show, Scott. Ooh, so.
I'm going to disagree with that.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frenino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.